My name is Hatem Al-Haj. I'm about 42 years old, and I came to the United States at age 22. I came from Egypt. I am a physician by trade. I finished my medical schooling in Egypt, and then when I came here, I first started out as an imam of a mosque because I had also been involved in Islamic learning and teaching prior to my coming here. So I started out as an imam in a mosque and I finished my testing or exams to become a physician here in the U.S. The word imam itself that is used here in the United States to refer to the person who leads the prayer, it's a name of a function. It's not a title for an individual. The person who leads the prayer in the masjid is called imam, but that is not a title. Like they did not call him outside of the masjid imam so-and-so, because he leads the prayers in the masjid. While I was in medical school, I also finished my Islamic studies at the equivalent of a college level. And then when I came here to the United States, while I was doing my residency in medicine, I was also pursuing a master's in Islamic law or Sharia. And I finished that shortly after I finished my residency. And then I pursued a PhD from a university in Tripoli, Lebanon, called Al-Jinan University. And I finished my PhD also in Islamic law or Sharia. During that time, while I was still pursuing my PhD, I started teaching online with Sharia Academy of America, which is an online educational institution that is meant to provide BAs and masters and PhDs. So I was teaching online. And then when I finished my PhD, I started to acquire a bigger role in the academy until I was chosen to be the dean of the Sharia Academy. I'm still an associate professor. Academically, I'm at the level of an associate professor, but administratively, I'm the dean. The majority of our students are from the United States, but we do have students from elsewhere as well. We have students from countries in Africa, you know, Europe, Latin America, Middle East, Asia. Well, the word the Sharia itself in the language, linguistically, means a path. And it more so means a path to a water body, or it means the water body itself. And the resemblance here between the path to a water body and the law in Islam, which is not only limited to penalties or penances, it is basically the creed, the practice. It is basically your relationship with God. It's your prayers, it's your fasting, it is your belief, it's your certainty in His presence, in His greatness, in His perfection. All of this is the path, is the way, the road that it was prescribed for Muslims to take. And they're not taking it to a physical water body that is important for their physical sustenance, but they are taking it towards spiritual sustenance. And that's the resemblance between the word Sharia and the word, the technical use of the word Sharia and the linguistic use. I go to Egypt quite often. I actually was in Egypt during the uprising. You know, it started on Tuesday, the 25th, and I was already booked to leave for Egypt on the 27th, actually 26th, which was Wednesday. So I arrived in Egypt on the 27th. I did not, you know, at the time I left, I did not really expect that this will carry on. I expected that there would be protests for a day or two, and it would not carry on. But I think I was fortunate enough to witness that history in the making. And I did not come back until the former president actually left power. I came back here on Saturday. He had left power on Friday, the previous day. I was participating in the neighborhood defense committees to a great extent. I was up pretty much all night, myself and my son, who's 15 years old. So we are trying to secure the neighborhoods and sort of relieve the people who need to go to Tahrir Square the next day in the morning. Well, the changes are long overdue in Egypt. There has been aspiration towards change in Egypt, and at times we would feel too pessimistic. I shouldn't say pessimistic, I should say we would feel very little hope that change is near in the foreseeable future because of the amount of tyranny, the amount of force that the people were subject to in Egypt to sort of suppress any dissidents or to suppress any aspiration for change or any attempt at change. Certainly there are differences between America and Egypt, and there are differences between the culture in the United States and the culture in Egypt. However, there are core values that human beings, by their genuine inclination, agree on. Whether they're Christians or Muslims or non-Christians, non-Muslims, something else, they, by the genuine inclination that, that God inculcated in us, we agree on many core values, such as kindness to the parents being a good thing, cruelty to animals being a bad thing. I think any human being, no matter what their religious or cultural background is, they would agree on those principles. So there were principles that, or there were values that you don't find different. There were certainly perspectives and perceptions that are different, but many of the core values that human beings agree on, you can find them wherever you go. I'm the only Muslim in Albert Lea, or my family is the only Muslim family in Albert Lea. But we have a Muslim community close by in Otana. Well, the Muslim community in Otana is rather decent, like maybe 500 families. I don't think that there is much struggle because at work people recognize that I'm Muslim, and the vast majority of people don't have any problem with this, and they recognize my faith. They I have excellent relationships with my coworkers, particularly people who work with me on a daily basis. So I don't have trouble in this regard. I do tell them that I have to go perform my prayers on Friday, and accommodations have been made for me to perform my prayers. I take the second half of Friday off, and I try also my best to show flexibility whenever needed, because I was, you know, shown flexibility. I think that there is some concern about the radicalization of segments of the Muslim community, and within every religious group or ethnic group, radicalization could happen. And Muslims are not immune to radicalization. I don't, however, agree with the approach to solving the problem. I don't agree with the magnification of the problem, nor the approach to solve it. Because if you alienate the very vast majority of practicing Muslims, and then you say that you are tolerant and accepting of Muslims, it may sound like you're tolerant and accepting of Muslims as long as they're not Muslim. And, you know, just recently I read about a senator in one of the states who wants to ban Sharia law and extreme manifestations of Sharia law, such as washing your feet and stuff like that. And I don't know how this would prevent anyone from being American, or from living up to his civic duties towards his country, or from being a good citizen, a righteous citizen, a good neighbor. If I wash my feet before I pray, and you happen to choose not to, I don't see how that can separate between us or make us this far apart from each other. Well, the misconceptions that people have about Islam have to do with the fact that people have limited exposure to Islam and Muslims. Historically, Islam is relatively new in the United States. Certainly, we can recall the presence of Islam, or there has been some presence. Some people are confident before Christopher Columbus. However, as a significant population, Muslims have not been part of the mosaic until the second half of the 20th century, you can say. And that makes people are a little bit unaware, and people sometimes have stranger anxiety, just like toddlers have stranger anxiety. People have different abilities to counter that stranger anxiety within them, to be able to outgrow that stranger anxiety. And if you have stranger anxiety, then Muslims would look strange to you, and you would be anxious about, you know, their presence and so on. So some of the misconceptions that I encounter have to do with women in Islam, for instance, and the position of women in Islam. Some people think that because of my wife being covered, that she is necessarily oppressed, and that someone forced this on her. Whereas when I married her, she was covered. So it was surely not me. Also, she actually started to cover before her mother. So it was not her father, because he would have forced that on his wife first. So she chose to cover. And she perceives this as, you know, as a symbol of liberation, not a symbol of oppression. It's her choice. And there are a lot of other misconceptions about Islam and women in various regards. There are also misconceptions about Islam and violence. And it is amazing how people have a short memory. Because if you look in the history, you know, the Muslims have not been, violence has not been only seen within Muslim communities. In fact, many Muslims believe that they were subject to violence from Europe, for instance, historically, in the Middle Ages, the Crusades, and thereafter imperialism, and so on. The violence is rejected, no matter where it comes from, and no matter who the perpetrator is, but it should not be attached to a religion that is inclined to counter violence and inclined to spread peace. Islam is about justice. So many people have this misconception about attaching the violence to Islam or to Muslims. And hopefully that will be clarified. Hopefully that will be short-lived. And we're aware of the circumstances. And we're aware that things do take time to be cleared out. And hopefully that will take its time also to be cleared out in the minds of people. Some of the other misconceptions So some misconceptions are sometimes funny, like when people think that, you know, people back in the Middle East are still riding camels, for instance. And so those are a little bit unfortunate, but you just can't help but laugh at those misconceptions. I think the path towards overcoming the misconceptions and mistrust and the lack of mutual respect between various groups of people will have to start from knowledge, recognition, awareness. I think more awareness and recognition of others and their beliefs and their way of life would bring about more mutual respect. Being Muslim in Minnesota during this time could actually be a great opportunity because the community is being formed versus Muslim communities that are more established. We're talking about the Muslim community being new to the United States in general, but in some places there is a more established Muslim community than in other places. Like in Detroit, Michigan, you can't compare Detroit, Michigan to the Twin Cities here in Minneapolis in terms of the Muslim community and how established it is. So now this is a community that is, the identity of this community is being formed, and the direction of this community is also being formed. So it's a good time, it's an exciting time to participate in shaping that direction and that identity of our community here in Minnesota. Minnesota is known to be tolerant and accepting as, you know, a people, you know, common Minnesota nice phrase. I think that there will be less difficulty for Muslims integrating within the Minnesotan community because of that acceptance. Usually, the disapproval of people makes them naturally sequestrate themselves or naturally alienate themselves because if they believe that they are not accepted, unless they completely give up their principles, they completely give up their values, their way of life, the thing that's most dear to them, which is their religion, then they will either make that decision and give up everything to be accepted. And if they did not make that decision, and the very, very vast majority of Muslims do not make that decision, and if they did not make that decision, then the only other option is to isolate yourself, to be protective and to isolate yourself and sequestrate your community. That could happen in some places. I don't think that it would happen in Minnesota. You know, my aspiration is for my children to grow up with no internal conflict between being American and being Muslim, to be able to reconcile between the national identity and the religious belonging, which may sound difficult during these times, but I don't think that it will continue to be difficult. I think that these times are transient and things will change in the right direction, and they will be able to reconcile between their religion and their national identity. That is important because in having an internal conflict or feeling that internal conflict is detrimental to one's psyche. And then I hope that they will be able to prosper in their careers and to also prosper in their relationships with, you know, with all people around them, their neighbors, their friends, and so on. That's what I would hope for them.